This show is part of the Pod Tyrant Network. For more podcasts, interviews, and content, visit podtyrant.com.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Bad Wolf Radio, a discussion and review podcast all about Doctor Who. I'm one of your hosts, Aaron Goins, and I'm here with the man that kept looking for Rory when the Romans showed up, Adam Farmer.
I did look for Rory when the Romans showed up. I mean, you can't see a Roman soldier without immediately thinking of Rory the Roman, right?
Yes.
I'm not the only one. I guarantee that vast majority of Whovians out there were looking for some reference to Rory the Roman somewhere.
Yeah, no surprise cameo by Arthur Darvill, unfortunately.
It would have been pretty darn sweet, though, right?
If they could have pulled it off, sure. But I don't know. Arthur Darvill, probably not the way he would want to return to Doctor Who. If he ever did return, which I don't think he ever will, but, you know, a random cameo in this episode, probably not.
His armor never quite fit him the best.
I think, although I will say, I never expected that he would show up in this episode, but it would have been cool if there was some sort of a reference, if the Doctor just kind of mentioned him.
Yeah, the Doctor mentioning him, or even, like, one of the soldiers of the Ninth Legion as they're walking into the Time Void, which maybe I'm going too much into the episode already, but like them mentioning that they wouldn't be the only ones to ever stand guard for essentially eternity.
Right. So, or like if one of them had mentioned the legend of, you know, the Roman that whatever. Some kind of reference to him, or just to hear Peter Capaldi reference that character would have been kind of cool. Because we don't get too many. He did do a I Miss Amy reference at one point. I think, yeah, early on, I think he said I Miss Amy.
Yeah.
But it would have been kind of cool to hear a Rory reference. Perfect opportunity. I don't know if they're going to get another opportunity that would have been this perfect to reference Rory Williams.
Yeah, long story short, there was an opportunity. Missed opportunity, but there was an opportunity nonetheless.
But yes, so we are going to be reviewing the latest episode of Doctor Who, The Eaters of Light. But before we do, there's a couple of news items that we can talk about. Something you dropped into the notes that I'm curious to talk about. Peter Capaldi, and talking a little bit about, you know, why he's leaving Doctor Who and all of that. So I thought that would be interesting to bring up.
Yeah, I was, again, just skimming headlines, jumping from article to article that mentioned Doctor Who, anything that really came up. Sources probably to be taken with a grain of salt. I guess it comes, though, from an interview with the Radio Times. Capaldi dropped some comments, which, at least at this point in time, without having the full interview in front of me, a lot of people are taking somewhat negatively. Kind of tossing Capaldi out there with some of the things that he said. Should I go ahead and read some of the quotes?
Yeah, read some of the quotes. I'm curious to hear this.
Yeah, so supposedly when it comes to why he's leaving Doctor Who, there's discussion of regeneration and different things like that, but why he's leaving, he mentions that he fears he wouldn't be able to keep it fresh. He said, I love this show, but I've never done anything where you turn up every day for 10 months. I always want to be giving it my best, and I don't think if I stayed, I'd be able to do that. So far, so good, right? I understand that part. I can't think of another way to say this could be the end of civilization as we know it. And then he goes on to say, with episodic television of any genre, the audience wants the same thing all the time. But the instinct that leads the actor is not about being in a groove. Some people have taken that as him complaining really about the day-to-day routine of the Doctor and the storylines, the plots that he's been giving, somewhat just growing bored with them. What are your thoughts on that? To be quite honest, I'm somewhat floored that this would have been said by Capaldi.
I don't know. I think it kind of makes sense to me that he's kind of running a bit tired of it. He's been doing it now for a few years, and I'm sure he, kind of what he said, you know, there's only so many ways you can pretend that the world is ending. You know, as an actor, he's probably, he's played the part enough, he's done enough episodes that he feels like he's given everything he can creatively. And it sounds kind of snobbish, but the, you know, Doctor Who is all about, you know, reinventing the Doctor. So I think he, as an actor, probably realized that this version of the Doctor's time is up. And I mean, I'm sure there was some element to him being the one to decide to leave, but, you know, they're doing a whole reset with a new showrunner and all of that. So it might not have 100% been his decision.
So the Doctor reinventing him is definitely baked into the show. But do you think we would be getting the same quotes from Capaldi if the storylines were a little bit more exciting?
Maybe not. I mean, he could be frustrated with the storytelling, just like it sounds like a lot of listeners are, or a lot of viewers are as well. So I know we have been, you know, kind of reviewing these last couple seasons, not negatively, but there's definitely been, it hasn't seemed like it's had the same writing level that we've seen previously with Doctor Who.
Yeah, and I think if we go back to even some of our more recent episodes from this series, one of the biggest knocks that we have so far, not against Capaldi himself or Capaldi's Doctor, but really the series overall that we've had of Capaldi, has been that it seems like he's lacking some more exciting storylines. It seems like he's lacking the storytelling that maybe Smith or Tennant may have received. His stories just haven't quite been as strong in some cases. I'm just curious if that might grate Capaldi ever so slightly.
He's probably getting tired of, you know, he's got to hear some of the negativity about the show and the comparisons probably to him and Smith and Tennant. And, you know, I think I've really enjoyed his run as the Doctor, but in general across fandom and talking to other people who either casually watch Doctor Who or were just getting into Doctor Who with Smith, you know, Capaldi's different enough, and a lot of people kind of jumped off. They were like, oh, you know what, this isn't what, you know, with Tennant and Smith, you had this kind of version of the Doctor, this younger, kind of dashing hero. And then you have Capaldi, who's just a complete reinvention, which I appreciated. But, you know, some of the fans who hadn't been watching the show as long didn't appreciate. So I think, you know, he probably gets a little tired of hearing the negativity and all that. So it might have grated on him enough. I don't think this interview sounds so bad. The answers that he's giving are the quotes that you just read to me. Although they do kind of read a little negative. It makes sense to me that he'd be a little burnt out at this point and ready to move on.
Okay. I mean, also, he's 59. That's Capaldi. Capaldi is up there in age, so he has time to move on.
Plus, I was at the theater the other day with my son watching Cars 3, and there was a trailer for Paddington.
I know.
He was in it, and I was like, oh, there you go. That's why he's leaving Doctor Who. He's got to be in Paddington.
He was in the first one. I mean, might as well stick him in the second one.
I have to admit, Capaldi. I never saw the first one, so I didn't realize he was in the first one.
Surprisingly good. I'm just going to toss it out there. Surprisingly good.
I did have a proud dad moment, though, because my son, who was watching the movie with me, so he saw that trailer, instantly recognized the Doctor.
Nice.
When he showed up at the doorstep in the Paddington trailer, he looked over at me and said, "Dad, was that Doctor Who?"
That's awesome.
So I was like, wow. He doesn't really watch the show with me. He just sees me watching it sometimes, so he picked up on it.
Nice.
But yeah, so, you know, that kind of a bit of a negative note to start the episode on. But we have some fun stuff to talk about, some cool stuff to talk about. We got some cool promo picks for We're old enough in time, and we got kind of the tease of the Master's new outfit, which, you know, yes. We love talking about fashion, Doctor Who fashion, right?
Heck yes, we do.
So,
heck yes.
You know, we have that to talk about. I think we can talk about, in the past, we've been saving some of the talk of the next episodes for after our review, but I think we're good to talk about it now.
Yeah, let's jump in. Let's do this.
So Master's outfit, you posted this online today, and that's how I caught it. And there's one in the promo pics. There's one image where it's just him, you know, standing there, full, you know, full body view of the Master, even holding a sonic screwdriver.
Yeah, is that so? I saw someone mention something called a sonic laser. Is that different than the sonic screwdriver?
I don't know. You got me there. Is that something that the Master is known to use? A sonic laser? I don't know if that's a classic series thing.
A device used by the Master, a laser screwdriver, was a device unlike the Doctor's sonic counterpart. It was not only larger and bulkier and generally used as lethal killing laser weapon instead of a multifunctioning tool.
Huh. Well, I mean, the description doesn't really match if it's supposed to be like bigger and bulkier, because it looks just like a sonic screwdriver to me.
Definitely does look smaller in the promo pics, but who knows? Maybe it is another callback to Classic Master, and it's a sonic laser, or a laser screwdriver. There we go. I need to get used to that.
Yeah, I'd be fine with that. I mean, that would be a great callback to the classic series if he has kind of a signature weapon that he uses, for them to bring that back into this run of the Master. They definitely brought back kind of that goatee look that was famous of the one of the classic Masters.
Yeah, I spotted that as well. Even his jacket looks somewhat similar.
So yeah, yeah, I thought the outfit looked pretty cool. I mean, it's pretty basic. You know, he's just got this big black overcoat. But I thought some of the detail, the nice little red lining on the collar, was a nice touch, and maybe kind of a nod to Capaldi having the red lining of the jacket as kind of his signature thing for a while.
Yeah, that jumped out to me as well. Like there does seem to be a lot of similarities to Capaldi's look. You can't really tell the length of the coat, but it looks like it might even be a similar length to Capaldi's, kind of like a thigh length. But the popped collar, the weird fold of the collar on the one side, or the lapel on the one side, the red lining, it looks daunting. And the Master himself, like, John Sim is no longer the scruffy bleach blonde hair. He looks older. He's got the goatee. He looks solid. I like how they're portraying him this time.
Yeah, definitely. He's a character that, you know, I know we've known for a while now that he's coming back, but I'm still kind of wrapping my head around the fact that they're bringing him back. You know, it's very exciting that this character, who was such a big part of the 10th Doctor's run, that, you know, and played a major part in the end of the 10th Doctor, that they're bringing this guy back. I mean, this is kind of a big deal. I mean, yeah, if you're talking about like characters that you could bring back from the 10th Doctor's run, like who would be the most impactful? I don't know if you could name another character other than maybe Jack that would have kind of as big of an impact bringing them back.
Yeah, outside of Jack and a regular companion, it seems like this is probably the most notable that you could go with. I'm really curious to see how it plays out. So I guess with this next episode, smaller role, but from what I've read, it sets it up for a fairly larger part in the finale. So it's going to be fun just to see how everything plays out. There is an interesting trailer that was, or short clip, whatever you want to call it, that was dropped, that shows Missy and John Sim's Master interacting with each other. Just very, very short, but cool to see them kind of on screen together.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm pretty excited. The Cybermen element of it's throwing me off a little bit. You know, they have the classic Cybermen as well as, it looks like, modern Cybermen that are going to be a part of this episode. You know, I'm not not so versed in the classic Cybermen. I think they just look kind of silly. But maybe there will be a connection as to like why they look that way in the transition.
Yeah, and I think even that short clip that I was able to watch that shows the Master and Missy together, there were some really, really, really creepy undertones to it. And like guys sitting in wheelchairs with their faces wrapped up, and kind of even in the promo pics, you see the creepy nurse lady and the creepy doctor looking dude. I'm kind of creeped out by this episode just from the promo pics itself. And I'm wondering if that's going to play into the Mondasian Cybermen, just how that goes down. But I'm kind of stoked for this next episode.
Yeah, I mean, these last two episodes have been, in my opinion, like we'll get to the review of the Eaters of Light, but I actually really enjoyed these last two episodes of Doctor Who. And then kind of moving into the finale here, the two-part finale, I guess, you know, kind of like we were hoping that the season would end on an upturn. It looks like it's going that direction.
Yeah, they've saved. I mean, we had rumors of this breed of Cybermen from the very beginning. We had the Master coming, and I don't know. One of my big fears was that it was going to be a mid-season reveal that really didn't carry much weight, but we're coming right down to the end of it. Two episodes left. And it feels like they've allowed the build up. Although we knew it was coming, although we know it's coming, they've saved this good amount of build up for just the perfect spot for me as we go into the end.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. They had a fun clip that was released where Missy, she you know, exits the TARDIS onto some sort of spaceship or space station, and she's like, "Hello, I'm the Doctor." You know, where she's kind of doing her best Doctor impression, and she introduces Bill and Nardole, but she can't remember their names. And that whole clip, I thought that was pretty funny.
There's even at the end of the Eaters of Light, they had the promo trailer, whatever you want to call it, for the next one, and her leaving the TARDIS and kind of just mock acting, calling Nardole and Bill her disposables. It looks like we're going to get a pretty comical look at Missy this time. Not necessarily a loony, crazy, nefarious look at Missy, but really just a goofy, somewhat playful, slightly mocking look at Missy, which plays in, I feel like, to the end of this episode that we're getting ready to review, and just how this weird development of Missy at this point. I'm really wondering what's going to happen moving forward with these last two episodes, especially with Missy, with John Sims' Master showing back up.
Yeah, I've liked what we've gotten from Missy so far. The small amount that we've seen of her, these little clips in each episode that she's shown up in, they're very key moments, it seems like. Just little lines that she'll say, or even how this last episode ended, which we'll talk about. It's been a good use of her. I've always said that I like her in smaller doses. And I think they've kind of mastered, no pun intended, that for this season.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I know there was some disappointment on my part when the reveal of the vault and who was in the vault, it happened, and it was somewhat anticlimactic, and it just took place. But yes, that happened. But how they've moved forward, and again, like you said, with the utilization of Missy at those moments, even though it honestly is like for 45 seconds, maybe 2 minutes at the end of every episode, it's laying just it's feeling like more and more and more important of a foundation just coming into the final season. And we know that, or two episodes, we know that Missy, she's done, right? Like these are her last two episodes as well. And it's, I'm really curious just to see how that's going to play out. And it seems like we have this transition for Missy, but you know, when John Sims Master shows up, that it's going to be like you have the Doctor on one shoulder and you have John Sims Master on the other shoulder, and Missy's in the middle and trying to figure out what the heck she's supposed to be doing. I'm waiting to see those conversations that take place.
Well, one more thing I wanted to mention before we jump into our review of The Eaters of Light is we know Moffat is leaving Doctor Who. And now we know one of the projects he may be working on.
That we do, along with none other than Mark Geddes.
Yeah, it seems like they're kind of a team now that works together, at least with their success from Sherlock, which I think Sherlock is kind of done now. They left it a little bit open-ended, but it seemed like that show's wrapped up, right?
I don't know. To be honest, I'm still working through that last season of Sherlock, so
okay.
I'm not the best judge.
Well, I won't spoil anything, but they all die at the end, so. I don't think, yeah, they do.
Rogue One.
They do kind of wrap it up in a way that if they wanted that to be the end of the series, it seems like a logical place to end it. But, you know, you never know, I guess. But we did find out that Geddes and Moffat are working together on another show for the BBC, which is going to be based on Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Yeah, how do you feel? How do you feel?
My first reaction was like, oh, that's what you left Doctor Who for? But after kind of thinking about it and reading a little bit more about it, I could see if they do it kind of in the style of Sherlock, in that kind of... Sherlock was very thematic, and they did a really good job of getting solid actors. So if they can kind of match that in a story about, like, and even maybe kind of match the whole idea of it being a modern day version of Dracula, and I don't know if that's where they're going, but, you know, with that's kind of what they did with Sherlock, I could see it being a fun show to watch.
Yeah, when I first read the headline, it was like, what the, are you serious? Like, how does that work? But the more that I've thought about it, the more that I don't know, I've kind of gleefully fallen in love with the idea. And like you said, like, depending on how they do it, the setting, the time frame, all of those little details, but to see something like that, I mean, truth be told, Sherlock has been incredible. I know that there's been some episodes that I didn't think were the strongest, but overall, like, Sherlock has been such an incredible grouping of series, mini series that he's thrown together, 90-minute movies. To see something like that happen with the intellectual property that is Dracula, that would be pretty darn incredible. My only hope is that it's also available to watch quite freely, similar to Sherlock.
And Moffat, I don't know if you know this, but he actually did a TV series that was based on Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Was that Jekyll?
Yeah, that was
okay.
Kind of a modern version of that as well. So,
yeah, I started watching it.
Seems like kind of his thing a little bit. You know, if he did Jekyll and, you know, Sherlock, where he took that into the modern times. You know, maybe that is kind of the direction he'll go with Dracula.
I would be all for it, just as long as it doesn't turn into a True Blood.
Oh yeah, I don't think it would. Doesn't seem like Geddes or Moffat style.
Yeah,
to do something like True Blood, but yeah. I mean, if Sherlock and Doctor Who are any indication, I think he would do a good job at pretty much any TV series he jumps into. So.
Yeah, for all the hard knocks that we give Moffat, I mean, I'm still a huge Moffat fan. There's no getting away from that. So I have a very soft spot in my heart for anything that he'll touch.
Yeah, I'm at least curious. So I'll at least watch the first couple episodes and then we'll see if it sticks.
yep.
Which is better than I did for Class. Still haven't watched an episode of that.
Womp, womp, womp.
I kept saying yep. I was going to, but...
It will show up on Netflix because it doesn't sound like it's going to make it very far.
Yeah. So we're going to review Eaters of Light. So we can jump into that now if you're ready.
Let's do it.
This one was written by Rona Munro and directed by Charles Palmer.
Yep. And do you know what's special about Rona Munro?
No. What is?
She is the only writer to write for both Classic and New Who.
Really? What did she write for Classic?
Survival, which was a, let's see here if I can snag the year on that, premiere broadcast 22nd of November to the 6th of December 1989.
Okay. So we were both alive in 1989, right?
Yep, we were both alive. Seventh Doctor, Companion Ace, included the Master, Cheetah People, Kitlings, and Midge.
All right. We'll have to check that one out.
Yeah, I was very surprised because based on my experience with this episode, that might be a solid classic episode to revisit.
Yeah, and I liked this episode. So, you know, bring her back. Let her write some more.
Heck yes. Heck yes.
But yeah, so this was an interesting episode. It's one of my favorite things about Doctor Who is when he goes back in time. And so we got that again. Kind of two episodes in a row. Although the other one was still set on Mars. It was back in time. So we got to deal with the British Empire. And now we're getting to deal with the Roman Empire and Celtics. Or Celts, or Celts, or whatever the right way to say it is.
Yeah, nice. Picts. P-I-C-T-S's, I think is what the doctor referred to him as. Not only does this one go back in time, but it's also, there's two other aspects of this that I absolutely love. Three. The one being they go back in time. Two, they deal with a historical mystery that there's really no answer to. It was somewhat of a backdrop to this episode, but the whole idea of the Ninth Legion, I absolutely love it when they take a historical mystery and they drop it into Doctor Who and give it a Doctor Who spin on it. And then third, what they did with the crows in this episode, I absolutely love. Like, similar to how you will never see an angel statue without thinking of a weeping angel, I don't think I'll ever be able to see a crow without thinking of this episode.
Right, yeah, the crow thing was kind of the cherry on top for me. Because I was already really enjoying this episode. And then they did the whole sentimental, cheesy moment at the end. Which, I always give Doctor Who a hard time for being cheesy. But it's a different kind of cheesy when it's just silly cheesy. That's when I'm like, eh. But when it's like this really sentimental, like romantic type cheesy, I'll eat that up all day. And so like that whole thing where they're like, oh, they're not, you know, the crows aren't cross or whatever. They're remembering. And I was like, oh, wow.
Yeah. And even like the sound the crow makes, like I always read it. I always hear it as being caw, 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 but it's car, car, car. And they are repeating her name over and over and over, which her name, we'll get to that. But that idea of basically taking something super ordinary, and really where I come from, no one likes crows, and giving them just this totally different persona and meaning, that's one of those things that really makes Doctor Who special for me.
Yeah, that was a nice little touch. In this episode, we literally jumped right to the end of the episode there.
We did, but it's such a good part of the episode.
Well, at the beginning, the crow starts out saying doctor. And then later on in the episode, the crow says monster. It says dark. I guess the idea that the doctor, because Nardole is surprised that crows can talk. And so the doctor's just like, oh, they've always been able to talk. People just stopped talking to them, I guess,
holding intelligent conversations,
right? So that's interesting. And there is I read the Game of Thrones books, and there is like an element in those where the crows are, I think in that they're ravens, but they kind of talk as well. So okay. it's almost like this lost, you know, it's been lost to time, this ability that this animal used to have. So it's kind of cool.
Yeah, I liked it.
But the doctor gets to go to Scotland, which is, you know, his homeland, if we're talking about the actor. And they gave a lot of digs to Scotland.
They did, and the doctor stood up for Scotland.
Yeah, talking about the dreary weather. I like the line where they find the dead body, and he's like, oh, this body died because of, like, being, you know, because of constant darkness or something like that. And Nardole's like, death by Scotland.
Yeah. And the doctor's just like, oh no, it would have taken far, far longer for that to happen. This was quick.
Right. But I guess the whole reason why the Doctor is even came to Scotland is because he was maybe trying to settle a bet with Bill. He wanted to prove that he knew more about the Ninth Legion than she did.
Yeah, which is totally interesting to me, which I think it might just be part of Bill's developing personality, which, again, I think I've said here recently, it doesn't seem like Bill has a set personality, that she is the companion that the episode or the writer needs her to be in that episode. But it does seem more and more as we get towards the end, she's challenging the Doctor even more. And it does sound like they had an argument over who knew more about the Ninth Legion. And Bill's like, I read the book. I loved the book. It's like, Bill, come on. Like, a book versus the Doctor? You know he's a time traveler, right? You can't really win an argument with them when it comes to historical events.
Right. I liked Bill a lot this episode. I liked her last episode. I think she has started to grow as a character and become more confident. And she had moments in the last episode where she showed bravery and she wasn't scared of dying like she seemed like every other episode before that. And that kind of carried into this episode. So I feel like it's been a pretty good, consistent growth for her. It took a little while. And, you know, because she is likely a one-season companion, it's kind of like, we may never get to really see her full potential. But I liked what we got in this episode from her.
Yeah, I might need to go back and just totally rewatch this series, because this idea of consistent gradual growth, I really don't see it. Like, it seems like as of the Empress of Mars, someone flipped a switch and Bill is starting to be different. And I would say even in this episode, there are some key moments where the Bill that we thought we had in some of the earlier episodes, it's no longer who she is, but I can't see this gradual growth. Like, all of a sudden it's just like, dang, she's not afraid of death anymore. She doesn't struggle with death. She doesn't, I don't know. She's
not questioning everything the Doctor does. Although she kind of does in this episode again, but for a good reason.
She does, but she's not pouting about it. Instead, she's standing up and being like, no, Doctor, this is not who you are. Like, I'm not asking you to save everybody. I'm going to let someone die because that's just how it ought to be. She seems like a different companion this episode, which maybe her growth started with the Empress of Mars. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe that's it. You know, that over the past two episodes, she seems to have been consistently better. But it was kind of a jump. So maybe there were some adventures they went on in between that we didn't get to see, where she kind of grew into that. Yeah, so they do find the Roman soldiers. Well, first of all, she gets separated from the Doctor, which I thought was kind of an odd thing, where the Doctor's just like, yeah, go down to the river without me. And then she goes missing for how long. But yeah, that seemed kind of irresponsible of the Doctor to kind of send her off on her own in this, you know, this ancient land that has dangers that would be posed to anyone. You know, there could be Roman soldiers around, there could be barbarians, there could be light-eating monsters. The Doctor just kind of sent her off into it.
So there's a Roman legion, and all of them went missing, and no one knows why they went missing. But go ahead, Bill, wander off by yourself. Have fun.
Yeah. So she does run into trouble. She runs into Carr, the girl who is by a fire, throwing like beads into the fire, kind of praying, I guess, to the ancestors or to the gods. Kind of an interesting moment there.
Yeah, and Bill just kind of like walks up.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, come on. Number one, the girl doesn't look like she's a Roman soldier, so I don't know why you are getting so close to her. But then the girl freaks out, and it's like, yeah, that I kind of jumped a little there. Because she went from crying over a fire, ripping things, saying, I honor thee, to all of a sudden chasing Bill down with crazy Woad Raider rage.
Yeah. So, which leads to Bill then running into a Roman soldier. So she does find...
She didn't really run into him. She fell into a hole and he just happened to be there.
Right. Yeah. So she does kind of find the Roman soldiers that she said she was going to find. She just finds what's left of the army that's been completely decimated, which is kind of crazy. The way that these Roman soldiers or anyone that died in this episode because of the light-eating monster, that was pretty gross.
I'm not going to lie. Like, that even surpasses the beach ball British, in my opinion. Like, the getting sucked in and turned into a bouncy ball of human is one thing, but this like dark glob, multiple chins, no bones, like that was pretty disgusting looking.
I'm not sure if that's really what would happen to a human body if all light was taken away.
I don't know, like
it's like they melted about, from the inside.
I know, the vitamin D and sucked and bones disintegrated and you just turn into a big glob of goo. That was weird.
But yeah, so the soldier she runs into, the singular soldier, he is, you know, he's kind of ashamed that he has run off, or he survived because he, you know, basically deserted and ran for his life, like all the other Romans that she meets in this episode. But then he ends up, you know, because I guess he's trying to help her, he ends up dying anyways.
Yeah, he redeemed himself. I got to say, though, when they're in the pit and they have the whole exchange about understanding languages, which I tried to think back through other episodes, like, is there no other episode where Bill would have asked this question or been struck with the fact that she could understand things? But their exchange about Bill not speaking Latin, the soldier saying, "You are speaking Latin," and she says, "I don't know Latin," and he says, "You said that in Latin." That I loved that scene, just to be,
oh really,
blunt, like, yeah, that I just the way that he delivered it, somewhat deadpan, I thought that was a fun exchange.
It was definitely a fun exchange. I felt like it was a little unneeded, because it's one of those things where you just kind of accept that everybody can understand each other, because otherwise it would be really hard to make this show. You know, if they had to subtitle or have all the different languages, like every alien species that the doctor ever meets just happens to speak English. It just kind of is something you just, I just don't care to know the detailed explanation. So I wasn't sure if this was just kind of, let's explain to the fans who don't know this about the show at this point, you know, the new fans, but I don't know. I just didn't really need the explanation.
Yeah, and I mean, think back to the very first episode of the series, Pilot, where we said there, it seems like a reintroduction, and they're slowly explaining things that those of us who've watched multiple series of it know about the Doctor. This is one of those things that they haven't covered yet. And then as we watched the Empress of Mars and then went back and watched the Cold War, and they show up in the submarine and Claire's like, "I don't know Russian." And they're like, "You're speaking Russian." Like, to me, it mirrored that exchange almost perfectly, but minus the doctor being in the middle of it and instead Bill figuring it out for herself. I don't know. To me, it was one of those fun nods to fandom and the functionality of the TARDIS.
Right. Yeah, so she loses that Roman. He gets killed by the monster, but then she runs off. He tells her to go find the caves. That's the stone that will be marked so she can know where the rest of the Romans are, and she finds her way in there and meets the rest of the Romans. But along the way, before she gets all the way in there, she does get a little bit of that black slime on her.
Darn black slime.
Which knocked her out.
Yeah, I'm still not too sure about that black slime. It doesn't seem like the black slime is the bad part, is it? I thought it was a tentacle that sucked the light out of you.
Yeah, I didn't really know where they were going with that, you know, why that even was important, because then she passed out, but then she ended up just coming to. It seemed like there was not a need for that to happen. There was no story reason for her to pass out because of black slime.
Yeah, no, you're right. There's nothing. I tried to think of something just right there. And there's really no reason for her to pass out.
They never revisit that, you know, as an element later on, that usually if you introduce something like that, there's a reason.
Yeah, like someone else is going to get black slime on them.
Right. Like if,
and they're not going to be able to sit in the sunlight and be healed.
It was almost like they had more of a purpose for it, but they just never, you know, maybe because of rewrites, or they had to cut some scenes out of the episode to make it short enough. Something was missing there.
I agree. It was one of those things that I was like, huh, black slime. That's interesting. Nowhere else did we ever hear about the black slime.
So kind of the main Roman that she meets, Cornelius, or is that Cornelius was one of them. What was the
Lucius?
Lucius was the main one. She meets him. He's kind of the main one that does all the talking, although a couple other ones jump in from time to time.
Granddad.
He's granddad. The oldest of the survivors, the one that they all look to. He's only 18. They did a good job casting, I thought. He actually, as I'm watching it, I was thinking, this guy looks so familiar, but I cannot place what I know him from. And I just assumed it was Game of Thrones, just because it seems like that's kind of where they pull people from time to time. The girl who plays Carr actually is from Game of Thrones.
Okay.
So she had a pretty small role, but she was in a couple episodes of Game of Thrones. And I did recognize her as well. But this guy, come to find out, he was actually in the big Star Wars movie, The Force Awakens.
Oh, really? Brian Vernal?
Yeah, he plays Bala Tick, who is the Scottish guy who is yelling at Han Solo to...
Oh, dang, you're right.
Yeah.
That is his face. Nice. I saw him, and he did look familiar in this episode, but I had no idea where he was, and I
had to look it up because he just looked so familiar to me. I was like, how do I know this guy's face? So I looked him up on the TARDIS data core and to see what else he was in. He apparently had done some audio work for a Doctor Who story before as well. So then I had to go to IMDb, and there it said he was known for playing Bala Tick in The Force Awakens. And I was like, oh my gosh, that is the same guy. And he actually plays, the role he plays in Force Awakens isn't just some walk-by role. He has a very important conversation with Han Solo, and they have the whole scene where his gang gets basically taken out by the monsters and stuff. So he got a lot of screen time.
Yeah, so. I guess I wouldn't have picked him up outside of like that black and red leather that he would wear in Force Awakens.
Yeah, but so he did a good job in this episode. I thought they had a pretty good cast outside of the main characters. They did a good job casting. A couple of the like barbarians looked a little too much like modern teenagers. But, like the one guy's hairstyle kept, every time they showed him, I'm like, really? With his cool haircut. But yeah. But they did overall, I thought they did a pretty good job with the casting, and the characters that had a lot of speaking parts did a good job.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like you focus on anybody that had more than like one line to say. And I was impressed with everybody else that they cast. The girl Carr, the keeper of the gate. There's that one speech where she all of a sudden just like jumps in and she says, "Let me tell you about the Romans," and she runs through just who the Romans are. That was a solid speech, the way that she delivered it. I thought they did a great job with the casting of more than just the main characters of Nardole and Bill and the Doctor, like the extra characters that they tossed in there, the secondary roles. I had no problem with them. They did a solid job.
Did they ever explain why Nardole was wearing a bathrobe the whole time?
No, they really didn't. But okay. You know what? You don't need to explain Artie anymore. He is what he is.
He was great in this episode.
He was.
Some great lines, just perfectly delivered. He's got the bathrobe on. He's just along for the ride. Nothing really phases him.
Yeah.
He's such a fun character. I'm going to miss him because I don't think he's going to make his way into the next series. But I don't know. He's pretty cool.
He has the ability, or they write him in such a way where he can deliver that comedic line at the perfect moment with the perfect timing and like the perfect delivery. And it just works. That's from him pulling out the popcorn to him saying that he makes the perfect spag bowl. And like they're not Italian, and he's telling the stories, and he has his face painted, and he speaks Scottish or with a Scottish accent. And even at the end when he's like, don't make me use my squeaky voice, like everything that he delivered throughout the episode, even though it's probably only like 5 or 6 words long, each statement that he drops, it works perfectly. Oh, and then he says it's worse than jazz when they start playing the bagpipes. Like, there's just these moments that I don't know. I will miss him. I don't know how he'll fit, if he would even fit in where series 12 is going, but, or series 11 is going, but it was, yeah, he was perfect this episode.
He's not like your traditional companion. You know, we have kind of the regular companions and kind of the secondary companions. He definitely falls into the category of a secondary companion, but man, he's been solid. Like, I've enjoyed his role more than Bill. I think he brings more to the show than she does so far.
Yeah, he just has this unique interaction with the doctor, right? Even at the end of the episode when everything takes place and you tell the doctor, hey, I don't hold a grudge or don't get mad at me. I know 10% of your secrets and I know the really bad ones. And I'm also the only one who knows where to find the tea cakes. Like, he's not afraid to approach the doctor and just flat out say, hey, this is just how it is. To me, that even like transcends his role of a companion, right? Like, he's not a companion. I wouldn't even consider him a secondary companion. I go back to how Matt Lucas described the role early on as being a valet. Like, he is not necessarily equals with the doctor, but he is essential to the doctor at this point. I'm not sure how he's essential now that like the vault is open and all that jazz, but he doesn't seem like we could even classify him as a companion at this point.
I'd still say he's secondary.
I respectfully disagree. <so.
laughs> I like nice categories that I can slot people into.
I burn all categories. Destroy categories. Don't categorize us.
Let chaos rule.
That's sweet that you can be so restricted.
Nice. Yeah, so that was a reference to a fun interaction with the characters, where they kind of flipped the script a little bit, because, you know, Bill thinks that she's going to be shocking these Romans, you know, with her modern lifestyle, and starts to kind of like, well, guys, I'm not really into men. And then the guy's just kind of like, oh, well, you know, I'm normal. I'm into both men and women, you know, and kind of, and she's like, oh, well, aren't we modern?
Yeah, so
I thought that was a funny way to kind of handle that situation, to kind of flip it like that.
Yeah, and I mean, we've seen that played out in a couple ways, right? Like, early on, we had the whole situation with the monster in the Thames, Thin Ice, right? That was Thin Ice episode where she's in the house and there's a whole racism conversation that takes place. Then like 2 episodes later, we have the situation where there's a guy that's blue, and the guy that's blue calls Bill a racist. And then we have like Bill in several episodes like being I'm not into guys, and that whole conversation taking place. And now we have Bill on the receiving end of it. Like, it's this weird mirrored situations that we've been given with Bill, where she's quote unquote pushing the envelope in some episodes. And then in other episodes, she's on the receiving end of it. I don't know exactly what they're trying to do with it. Because honestly, it feels like in some senses they're making light of it. But it's like making a joke out of it, out of the conversation, but it is kind of interesting.
So kind of the big thing that's happening in the story is you have this gate where the monster came from, and these, what are they called again? I keep calling them barbarians, but they're not barbarians.
They were called Celts and they were called Picts.
Picts. Okay. So the Picts have been guarding this gate over the generations. But I guess because the Romans showed up, then the one decided that she was going to let the monster through, hoping that he would take out the Romans, but also get injured enough by the Romans that he wouldn't be a threat anymore. And this monster has now been loose, and they need to get him back in there.
Get him back in there. And we have the whole concept of the gatekeeper, and really what it comes down to is at the end, it's putting the monster back through the gate. It's a time vortex, so 2 seconds in there is 2 days outside of the vortex, and really that's what they need to do, and the doctor has a plan.
Yeah, and I thought that this was another situation in Doctor Who where you kind of just have to go along with it, because when you really, well, I was thinking about it, I'm like, this doesn't make any sense. You know, this gate is there, and they send somebody kind of to defend the gate, but the doctor goes in there and sees, and he's like, oh, there's a million of these monsters on the other side. It doesn't, and they seem to be in this kind of weird realm that's not like even any kind of a normal reality as we would know it. They're kind of just all floating around in like some kind of nether space. It's just this real bizarre thing, and you're thinking, okay, they have one warrior that's protecting this gate, but there's a million of these monsters. If those guys wanted to come through, they could just come through.
Yeah, and there was something said during the episode, like, they're only able to come through one at a time.
Oh, maybe I missed that. But even then, still.
Even then, the idea of, like, I mean, all they really had to do is take down one, and then they could all come through, right? It doesn't seem like one warrior would be able to do all that much. It is like this interesting aspect of the episode where, again, I feel like you get so caught up in the other elements of the story, at least I do, that this is the type of thing that it's just there and I'm not really giving all that much thought to it. I go back to Father's Day with Rose, right? Where you have this paradox situation take place and all these creatures come out of nowhere because of the time rift. Like, that's what these creatures were to me. They were just another thing that happens with a rift in time. And you needed someone to stand in the gap and keep them from coming through the door.
Right. And it doesn't really matter. You know, you don't, it doesn't have to really make sense, but it was kind of one of those things where I was trying to wrap my head around it to see, does this really make a lot of sense where I'm just going to not question it at all? Or are there some missing pieces? I felt like there were some missing pieces.
Yeah, and to me, the doctor was sitting in a hollowed out husk of a Dalek, and he just lifted a cup of tea, right? Where did he get the cup of tea? It doesn't matter. It's the doctor.
Yeah.
I was cool to kind of let it roll.
Because even the solution where they're all like, okay, we're going to go in there. And so they send in, you know, the remaining Romans, and Carr goes in there. And it's like, okay, where are they going? And how, right. You know, are they just going to hang out in there until they run out of food? Like, they're not going to be able to come back, and they don't live forever. So once, you know, they kind of all die, then the gate's going to be vulnerable again. So I don't know. There was a lot to it where I was just like, it doesn't make a lot of sense, but it's a very romantic story of these soldiers who are going to go in there and live forever and forever protect this, you know, this world through this portal. So maybe once they go on the other side, they become timeless.
Yeah, I don't know, because like there's the whole idea, and I don't want to just like, I don't want to lay out this last part with the doctor just in discussion of this scene, but that the doctor did mention you have a finite lifespan, right? You're gonna go in there, you're gonna die. Yeah, you save us for 70 years, but ultimately, we are going to need someone else to step into the place and just keep sacrificing yourselves until the sun burns out. Essentially, that's what it comes down to. So they're not going to be timeless, right? They're going to go in there and they're going to be able to survive for like 5 minutes before they succumb and they're killed. But that 5 minutes outside of the vortex is 70, 80, 90 years.
I completely forgot about the time difference thing. So that makes a little bit more sense.
And so I guess like you figure only one can come through at a time. So you shove Carr and 5 other Romans into the gap, and they should be able to have better success against one at a time. So maybe because there's 5 of them and they're able to fight better, that means that they will last for 20 minutes, and that 20 minutes turns into a million years. I don't know. That's kind of the justification I was doing in my head, but it feels like one of those things, the more that you try to explain it, the less satisfying the conclusion becomes.
No, I like that, actually. I like the time difference explanation, and what was, you know, minutes to them was, you know, generations outside of there. So, because the doctor did kind of indicate that they were still, you know, even when they jump back into the future, he was just like, yeah, they're still fighting that fight.
Yeah.
Protecting the world. So they're still doing it.
And I just got to say, poor bagpipers who walk through the void too, right? They don't have swords to fight. They're just walking through the voids, banging their drum and playing their bagpipes. They're going to be playing those bagpipes for eternity.
So, yeah. But the doctor, his big plan was that he was going to do it. You know, he was going to say, hey, I'm going to go in there. I'm going to be the protector of this portal. And because I can regenerate, I can just do it until the sun burns out. Which I was sitting there thinking, that's the stupidest thing ever. I was on Bill's side. I'm like, what are you doing? Like, this is like back. This reminds me back to like when the doctor decided to stay in a town called Christmas for 300 years and wasted the last of his regenerations. I'm like, what are you doing? Like, you have a responsibility. You know, you have been the kind of defender of the galaxy and the defender of Earth for all these years, for hundreds, thousands of years, and you're just going to waste your life standing in front of this little portal? Like, let the Celts do that. Go back and do your job. You know, I don't know. Like, I did not think it was a good idea at all. And, you know, I like that Bill kind of agreed with me and her and Nardole and everybody else prevented him from making that bad decision. But come on, Doctor.
I think, and that's one thing that stuck out to me as I watched the episode again, is like there's this interesting position that the Doctor's in, and really that we're given these characters of, where vast majority of the secondary characters that we see, they're young, right? We see the Celts and they've lost their parents, and he says, where are all the grown-ups? And he tells the gatekeeper Carr, what'd you do? Throw your action figures at them. You're only an embryo. And then we have the Ninth Legion, or what's left of them, and they're all 18 years and younger. And they call the 18-year-old granddad because he just happens to be the oldest. And the entire episode, the doctor is talking down to them and telling them that they need to grow up. And then they get to this final scene, and the doctor's still like talking down to them as kids. He calls them kids even in the last couple minutes, and they can't stand up for themselves. They can't do this themselves. They need a grown-up. They need me to step in. And just this really interesting situation where, I mean, that final scene where Carr steps up and she says, Doctor, you said grow up, fight my own fights, and basically taking control. We have that situation where the doctor is looking down on humanity, and basically humanity saying, screw it, we're going to do this ourselves. And this, I think, is such an interesting spot for Bill, because Bill, again, she's willing just to let people die. And she says, no, like, let them do this. This is what they need to do. But is she doing it because she thinks it's right, or is she doing it just because she wants to save the doctor again? I don't know. But in that moment, it's such this interesting thing where the doctor views them as being kids, and the kids are stepping up and saying, you know what? We're doing this.
Yeah. And then we get Missy at the end.
Oh,
they go back into the TARDIS. Missy's just hanging out, which the doctor apparently was completely fine with her doing that. But Nardole and Bill were both very surprised. And these are the moments we're kind of talking about, how they drop in these little moments with Missy that seem like they hold a lot of weight.
They definitely seem like they hold a lot of weight. And honestly, this the last moment of this episode where the doctor and her are again standing like inches away from each other. They're holding hands briefly. This is the scariest scene of the entire episode for me. There's something about this scene that's just downright freaky. I don't know what's going on. And Missy scares me, and the relationship there scares me, and I have no idea what's going on.
Yeah, and he's kind of like, you know, she's crying, and she's like, why am I crying? And he's like, oh, maybe you're just trying to impress me, which is something we've discussed. Like, is she really reforming, or is this just all an act?
Yeah.
And the doctor, you know, he's not dumb. He's not falling for it. And so he's just like, are you just trying to impress me? Or maybe it's time for us to become friends again, which I thought was interesting. You know, because we know she's going to be involved in the next couple episodes. We have the master coming back. So is she going to team up against the master with him, or what, you know? So there's a lot of unknown with her. I'm leaning towards she's not really reforming. You know, I think she'll even die. I think when this is all said and done, because she's trying to do something to trick the doctor to gain more power, to defeat him, and I think she's gonna misstep and not survive to the end of the series.
So I wanted to ask you, because like based off of everything that you just said, the doctor drops a line. It's like the last spoken line at the end. The doctor says, this is what leads up to it. The alternative is that this is for real and it's time for us to become friends again. Missy says, do you think so? And the doctor says, I don't know. That's the trouble with hope. It's hard to resist. When he talks about the trouble of hope and it being hard to resist, do you think it's Missy's hope that they can be friends again and the doctor's leading her on with that hope in hopes that that hope helps her reform? Or is it the hope that the doctor has that she's reforming and that's what's hard to resist? I feel like it could go either way, but what's your thought?
I think that line is great.
It is such an incredible line.
And it's so true. You know, because we all want we want to see the best in people. We want there to be hope. And I do think that's how I read it. I read it as he's trying to see the best in her. And he is hoping that she is reforming. But he knows that, you know, that's the danger with that, is he's seeing what he wants to see and maybe being duped. And so I think that's a reflection when he says that quote. I think that's a reflection on him and his feelings, and him trying to be careful not to fall for what he hopes is happening with her.
Yeah, I see the times I watched it, I've seen it both ways. Like the first time I watched it, I thought, okay, it's the doctor's hope. The second time I watched it, I think you poisoned me a little bit because you've said multiple times like the doctor just plays to whoever he's with. He doesn't really actually, a lot of times he's not honest with what he's saying. He's just saying it to get a reaction that he wants. So that's what I saw the second time I watched it, that he's just playing to get the reaction that he wants from Missy, that he's more clever than Missy and he's hoping to egg her forward. I don't know.
I think it's different with Missy than it is with his companions. I think the doctor can't help but take his companions for granted, and because he's been through so many of them, that I think he does. I think he lies to them. I think he acts a certain way to make them feel more comfortable. I definitely think that about the doctor, especially this version of the doctor. But when it comes to Missy, I don't think he plays that same game, partially because she's a Time Lord. There's a little bit different. He feels like he's on the same playing field with her, whereas I think he kind of, and you know, it sounds bad, but I think he kind of looks down on humans. But since she's a Time Lord, I don't think he treats her the same way. And I think he truly cares about the master, in any form that he or she has taken. I mean, we saw how hard it was for Tennant, and when he was up against Sim, and he kept trying to save him, you know, like, no, come with me. Like, you can be a good person. You know, even though Sim did such horrible things, Tennant in the end was still clinging on to their friendship and trying to save him. And I think that's the dynamic between the master and the doctor. They are best friends.
Yeah.
They just happen to be trying to kill each other.
Nice. Well, that honestly, what's your gut verdict on this episode?
I mean, it wasn't like, it's not going to go in like my list of top 10 modern episodes. You know, it's not up there with 11th Hour. It's not up there with Vincent and the Doctor or Blink. You know, some of those like awesome modern Doctor episodes. But it's a good episode. I enjoyed it. It was fun. And especially compared to what we've gotten this season, it's been one of my favorites this season.
See, I don't know where I'd put it, but I would say that it was a great episode. It wasn't good. It was great. Just the different things that set up the story. They're going back in time. There's the mystery. We have the whole situation with the crow. I mentioned those at the beginning. That's because to me, those three elements are bedrock of the story. You hit me with those three things right off the bat, and I'll probably love the episode. You give me in the past, you give me a mystery, and you take some ordinary object and you give it a different, totally different story. To me, it was a great episode. It is probably the highlight of this series for me. And I would say this is, it's the standout, one of the standout, maybe top five episodes for Capaldi. I don't know where it would rank in my 10 or where I'd put it in my top 10 for New Who, but for Capaldi, it's probably top five.
So for our listeners that love us ranking stuff, what's your top three episodes this season?
This season, just shooting from the hip, I'd go Extremis. Oh, why are you doing this to me? I'd go Extremis, the Eaters of Light, and then I'd go Pilot.
Okay. Yeah, I might be the same, actually. I think the Empress of Mars would be right in that mix as well. Those four episodes.
I think I just contradicted myself, though, because I said this was like the highlight of this series. and I mentioned Extremis first. That's how torn I am.
The problem, I really liked Extremis, like, in the potential of where that story was going, but because of where that story went, it kind of ruins that episode for me.
Yeah.
Because it was like a trilogy, you know, a three-parter, right? Or was it a two-parter?
No, that was the trilogy. That was okay. The three-parter.
Yeah, so it was a three-parter, so even though it started out really strong because of how it finished up, and it just didn't, I don't know, it just didn't work for me as a three-part story, it kind of ruins that first part. So I'm going to take that out. I'm going to say Pilot, the Empress of Mars, and the Eaters of Light are my top three.
Yeah. I
not think necessarily in that order, but those three.
I think if someone sat me down and said, hey, series 10, which episode should I watch first? I would probably give them the Eaters of Light.
Yeah. I think Pilot's still my favorite. I really liked how the season started. All right. Well, yeah. So it's been a couple episodes in a row now that have been good. It looks like we have some good stuff still coming up. And we have the big, you know, finale with Sim and the Masters working together or working against each other. We'll see. So I'm pretty excited about these next couple weeks of Doctor Who.
Yeah, we're definitely going to... I mean, we're coming right up to the end of it. We only have two left. That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's just crazy talk.
It's almost over. Then we'll have the wait till the Christmas special and then the big, and we'll have all that time between the end of the season and the Christmas special to speculate on who the next Doctor is going to be and if we're going to get a new companion and all that. So
yeah, crazy stuff.
Good times coming up. So, but I think we're good to wrap up this episode for now.
Sounds good.
So as usual, you can leave us a review on iTunes, or you can even find our episodes over on iTunes. If you listen to our show and you enjoy it, we'd love for you to leave us a review over on iTunes. It'll help other people find our show. You can follow us on Twitter at Bad Wolf Podcast, Facebook, Bad Wolf Radio. You can join our group over there as well. And we actually got a couple requests for people since our last recording to jump into our group over there. So
awesome.
Thanks, guys, for joining, and continue up the conversation over there. Instagram at Bad Wolf Radio. You can send us an email, badwolfpodcast@gmail.com. And you can always find us on the Pod Tyrant Network over at geektyrant.com. So until next time,
later days.